the private record. We got like a, I mean, this is like an intense, a really intense story. It involves something called, which I was unaware, completely unaware of before hearing this story. Our guest's name is Becca. She's very sweet, very cool, very kind, and has a just this crazy story. Somebody, how do you even say this? Somebody committed pedestrian suicide using her. And I think that's the best way to say it. They used her to commit pedestrian suicide. That's the way to say it. I didn't know what pedestrian suicide was. Once I learned from Becca during this interview, it made sense. I was just going to say something fucked up. I was going to say it's a very creative way to kill yourself. It's a very fucked up way to kill yourself, though, because you're involving someone unwittingly and unwillingly, and I don't like that. So that's my take on that. Anyway, Becca went through it. It was obviously a very fucked up experience. She kind of ends up having a sense of humor about it, which I think is essential if you experience something this fucked up. And I appreciated that. I think you will too. But yeah, Becca's story about pedestrian suicide, I'm going to leave it at that. If you want to be a guest on the show, go to theprivaterecord.com and submit yourself as a potential guest. I look forward to hearing your story. Of course, follow us on all socials, Instagram, TikTok, at The Private Record. And of course, the most of course, subscribe to our YouTube channel, at The Private Record. Like and comment and do all those things that you know help us out. I appreciate you. I appreciate if you do that, but I appreciate you anyway. As I always say, I love you. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for washing. Thank you so much for washing my body every time you watch this show. No, but seriously, thank you so much for watching or listening. However you take this in, I very much appreciate you. I love you. Thank you. I'll talk to you again soon. All right. Welcome to The Private Record, Becca. It's good to have you. We are excited to hear your story. If you don't mind, would you briefly introduce yourself and maybe give us like the headline or genre of the story, however you see fit?
Yeah, my name is Becca. I am 27 years old. I live in Beaufort, Georgia. And when I was 22, somebody used my car for pedestrian suicide.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Wow, that's a first. Maybe the only one we ever hear, but I am more than ready. All right, let's get into it.
Yeah, so I was driving home from work. It was like 2 a.m. I'd left work. It was January 27th, 2019. I lived about 30 minutes from my job at that point. It was on the south side of Atlanta. And I put my car just like on cruise control, just under 70. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sleepy. I just gotten up work. So like I wasn't intoxicated or anything. And so I just turned my music up so I wouldn't get sleepy and just put my car in cruise control and went. And when I got to this one overpass, it's an exit where 75 splits to 285, which is like our interstate that goes around Atlanta. That's also the same exit to get to the airport. It's a very unlit overpass, very unlit area because there's zero pedestrian access. It's probably half a mile to a mile from any exit that would have any kind of pedestrian access. So as I got under that bridge, you ever hit a deer? You know, you kind of don't have any reaction time.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it's the darkness alone. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she had been walking perpendicular just across the lanes since it was so empty. She just saw my headlights in the distance. And I was the one she chose. And I just kind of remember seeing a flash of a person.
Yeah.
And the detective said he could tell I tried to swerve to avoid her. Clearly, I was unsuccessful.
Right, right.
And like I was in the far left lane, and next to me was like the carpool lane. And you could see kind of the dents from her on my front right corner of the side, and I went straight towards the median. To this day, I can't tell you how my fight or flight kicked in so well that I controlled my car the way I did. But when I hit the median, I had attempted to swerve back right. So when I hit the median, I hit it with my wheel, and my wheel completely snapped off with the bolt still attached.
Whoa.
And then I, so then I spun out across like six lanes and traveled a pretty far distance until I hit the guardrail. But when I hit the guardrail, I hit it with my like corner bumper. Mm-hmm. So I never hit anything head on to make my airbags deploy, to shatter any glass. I never hit my head. I walked away really sore and with a scratch this big from my seatbelt.
And that's it?
That's it.
So just, I know there's more to the story, but I want to talk about this part real quick.
Yeah.
How, at what point, if you can even remember, like, did it ever cross your mind that you had hit a person? Until you like obviously saw the aftermath and everything, but
it took a second, because when I finally came to a stop, I was just sitting there. I was like, "There's no way that just happened. Like, there's no way. There's no way."
Yeah.
And I like opened my door. It was so cold that night. It was like 18, 20 degrees. And I remember opening my door, and like I said, there'd been nobody on the interstate, but finally there was like another car coming. They didn't stop, but just in their headlights, I saw like a lump on the ground. And that's when it really kind of sank in for me.
Oh, wow. That is...
Yeah.
So there's nobody else around on the road even then too. So you're basically alone. I mean, you must have just... when I get that scared and that shaken up, I almost always lose my memory of exactly what even happened.
A lot of it's a blur.
Yeah. So, so then what did you do then in this situation? Did you call 911 immediately, or did they just show up?
I'll walk you through the parts I do remember, because between, like you said, how terrified I was and the adrenaline spike, so much of it is a blur. I don't really remember a lot of the timeline of who showed up when.
I
just remember like certain instances. So I just completely lost it. My phone had gone flying through my car. It was on a magnetic mount. So then I had to hunt for my phone.
Oh my God.
I called 911. I don't know how they understood what I was saying, because I was just incoherent babbling at that point. And when I got off the phone with her, the first people to arrive, I know it was the HERO unit, which is like the first response from DOT here in Georgia, like people with the big trucks with the light lit up signs that the lane is closed. They got there first and they came over to my car to check on me, and they kind of got me talking through what happened so that I could form sentences when the police showed up. And I remember one of them, he was like, "So how fast were you going?" And I said, "Well, my cruise control was set on like 68. He said, "Speed limit 65. So what was your cruise control set on?"
I
was
like,
"65. He said, "There you go."
Whoa. Like, so he's like immediately on your side.
Yeah. I mean, even if like, no matter what, it's not my fault. And I know that.
Was my next question though. Like at any point, because knowing the way my mind works, or at least the way I think my mind works, if I'm putting myself in your situation, there's a part of me in the back of my mind that I think would start to think, is this going to get somehow twisted to be my fault?
Yeah.
And that would kick in, scare the living shit out of me, at least
for sure.
Before I had
that
any answers.
That was a major fear of mine. On one hand, I knew I didn't do anything wrong.
Of course, you know, right? But you don't know what other people are going to think.
Am I going to get arrested for vehicular manslaughter?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It was terrifying.
Yeah.
And so they kind of got me talking. I can't tell you when the police showed up, when the ambulance showed up. I can't tell you. I do remember one. So I was just kind of huddling in my car trying to keep warm. And because my car wouldn't even turn on, I was just trying to stay out of the wind. And most of the officers, since I was stopped on the shoulder, were standing in like the far right lane. And I remember at one point, one of the sergeants, he came up to me, just kind of squatted down, And he was like, he asked me, you know, how old are you? And I said, I'm 22.
Oh, man.
And he was like, you know, I'm so sorry. You know, I have a daughter similar to your age. We see so many terrible things that unfortunately we get a little numb to it. And yeah, we have to remind ourselves to be human when people experience trauma. So I just want you to know that I am so sorry. And this should have never happened to you.
Wow.
And I just started crying all over again. And after I had gotten off with 911 initially, before anybody had even showed up, I called my parents. And let me tell you, waking your mom up at 2 in the morning, telling her you just killed somebody. I don't recommend that phone call. She said, because she was so sleepy too, she only got bits and pieces of what I was saying too. She basically just heard like car accident, killed somebody, me crying.
I'm sure she was absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, beyond just being totally frazzled, like what is even happening? It's 2 a.m. and I'm getting a call. Beyond that, she must have just been scared out of her mind. Even if you were clearly able to state what happened, I would imagine any parent in that situation is just like horrified, you know?
They were. So her and my dad hopped in the car and they asked me where I was. I told them and they were like, okay, we'll call you back as soon as we're on the road. Mm-hmm. So they did. And she stayed on the phone with me as I was waiting for everybody to arrive. And anytime someone would need to talk to me, I'd hang up and call her back afterwards. And I'm not even to the craziest part, second craziest part of the story, by the way.
It gets worse. Take your time, though. I'm curious as to how it all unfolds. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So eventually one of the medics came to my car and he was checking me out because, like I said, physically, I was fine.
Right.
Physically, at least. Mentally, emotionally?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Totally messed up. So I was giving him my release signature. He sat in my car with me to kind of check me out and everything. And all of a sudden, I see these lights from behind me. And I hear people yelling, get out of the way, get out of the way. Because there was a drunk driver that went on the exit ramp for 285 because that was still open.
Oh.
And cut across the barricade because they didn't like that the lanes were shut down and came flying through the accident investigation.
What?
And I turn and I see one of the officers that's standing next to my car go up over his hood. They hit the officer and he just goes splat onto the asphalt. So then I scream bloody murder and start sobbing all over again.
Oh my God. It's like a cursed longitude, latitude, axis area. Like anything, you just don't be right there ever.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Still to this day, I have not driven on that stretch of 75 and I don't think I ever will.
That's so crazy. I've never heard of anything even close to this. No, so
it sounds like a movie plot, right? Why would this happen?
Yeah, it sounds like a bad movie. Like you'd read it or see it on screen, in the script or see it on screen, think that's stupid. That would never happen. But okay, so now it's just another.
Uh-huh.
But this one is like that driver in that case is obviously completely culpable for that. And did they drive away? Did they keep going?
No, he stopped.
Oh,
he stopped.
Wow.
Every single officer surrounded that car, drew their guns.
Oh,
the
my
medic
God.
That was in my car. Yeah, I just sat there sobbing, watching all of this happen.
Whoa.
And the medic that was in my car, he goes, stay here, and like hops out and goes to tend to him. And I just remember calling my mom back and saying, I know it doesn't sound like it could get any worse, but it did. And she was like, what now?
Wow.
So,
wow.
Two for one special that night.
So wait, hold on a second. Okay, so. This is going to get a little graphic, and if you don't want to get too into it, it's fine.
I'm totally open talking to it, so ask me whatever you want.
The cop, I'm assuming, died.
That's the thing. He and I both walked away without a broken bone.
A what? So, God. Okay, so at least there's only one, not that this is good, but at least there's only one dead person, and it's the person you hit who meant to die, at least.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So I found that out because like they immediately loaded him up in the ambulance that was meant for me and raced him off to the hospital. And so I had no idea what happened to him. I assumed he died too.
Right. Yeah.
But like a week and a half later, when they finally released my car to insurance, the detective, like I asked him, I was like, is he okay?
Yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, he didn't even break bone. And I was like,
that's crazy. He's like made out of rubber. That's not even something I can even imagine. How do you not break a bone? You get hit by a speeding drunk driver, go flying through the air, splat on the ground, and you don't break a bone. You're living right somehow. Yeah. Who knows? Speaking of, I mean, not to be crass, bodies. When you're waiting, going back a little bit before anybody even arrives, and it's you alone on an open road, you are coming to the realization that you hit someone. Obviously, I'm assuming though that you don't know that that person was trying to commit suicide yet, because in your mind you're too all over the place, right? Okay, so do you even? You said you saw like the outline of the deceased person in the headlights of another car. Are you just like, I'm not even going near that? I don't want to look.
I didn't even try.
And so how did you come to learn, how did the cops come to the conclusion that it was that? Like, how did they know? I'm sure they see that kind of thing a lot. So what are the signs that it was what it was?
Really just because number one, the way she was walking, it wasn't like she was walking on a shoulder with traffic. She was walking across.
Right.
And the fact that I had been the only car anywhere near.
Right.
You could easily happen to walk in front of my car. And then the fact that there was also, I still have no idea how she even got to where she was. Because like I said, it was solid half mile to a mile in either direction from any kind of exit with pedestrian access. Like the exit that we were, that she was walking under, it was just another interstate. There wasn't any kind of like pedestrian access. It was,
you couldn't easily get there without entering from way far away and then walking to where you were. God, I mean, not that it even is a material in the sense of the story you're telling, but I wonder what the fuck it is that brings, like, you know, you hear about suicide in a number of ways. Why? Because I actually have a friend of mine in a somewhat similar situation to you, was driving on the freeway in LA, and then he went under an overpass. There was like a walkway for pedestrians above where he was driving, and someone totally unbeknownst to him leapt off, committing suicide or intending to, and happened to hit my friend's car. And my friend was the one that not only killed the person or completed the suicide, if you will, but saw, like, it just so happened the way the person fell onto the windshield, like he saw the person. So it like fucked up, this fucked my friend up like for years, you know, because of the, I think obviously the situation is terrible all around, but I think because of the face-to-faceness of the moment.
I can't even
moment,
imagine that. Yeah. Like that. I'm so glad it was nighttime at least, because I can't even imagine seeing, like experiencing it is horrible enough.
Yeah.
But seeing the face on your windshield.
Yeah.
I can't.
People talk about suicide, and I know everybody's got specific feelings about it. Some people think it's just so terrible that anybody would do that, or it means they're weak or whatever bullshit. And then there are people who are very sympathetic or empathetic, but it does. I do wonder about the kind of person who wants to commit suicide and so badly, or chooses of all the ways to do it, to involve someone completely innocent and nothing to do with them, just like at random almost. You know what I mean? It's a really strange.
That's been one of the worst parts for me to try to figure out how to handle, because as someone who's dealt with, you know, depression, anxiety since I was in high school.
Yeah.
You know, I've always been very sympathetic to any kind of mental health struggles. The fact that mental health has become such a normal thing to talk about in recent years, it's a beautiful thing to see. Mm-hmm. And I've never been one to say people who die by suicide are really selfish.
Yeah,
Like, I get why people would feel that way. That's not, I don't share those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to involve someone totally innocent and force them to take part in your suicide is the most selfish thing you can do. That for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the other thing, the main thing I wanted to talk about, which is like, how do you, it's kind of so complicated when you think about it. Like because even my question, how do you deal with it? There's a dead person there. And it's like, there's so many other people that are probably affected by this person's suicide, ostensibly people who know that person or whatever. But like, you are just as involved now as anyone else, and if not more so than someone who might have loved that person. So what are the steps you take? I mean, like the next day, like, let's talk about that. Like, where is your head?
We did not leave until after 5 in the morning. By the time my parents, I remember when they finally got there, I bolted straight to my mom. And as soon as she hugged me, my legs just gave out. And my dad had to like half drag me to the car. And we had to be there way longer than expected, because after I gave my statement to Clayton County PD and wrote that out, I gave it to the officer and he was like, I'm going to need another one from you. And I was like, why? He said, you witnessed the officer involved accident. So state patrol's on their way. You need to give another statement to them.
Oh my God. Wow.
So, we didn't leave until after 5 in the morning. People were starting to go to work. Morning rush hour was beginning in Atlanta. And, but when we got home, I took ZQL and tried to knock myself out, because my adrenaline was still so high. There was no way I was getting a second of sleep. And I still only slept about 2.5 hours. I woke up at 9 a.m. With ZQL in my system.
Right.
And when I went downstairs, the words good morning didn't even come out of my mouth. And my mom looks at me and she goes, I called your therapist. You have an appointment at 1.
Thanks, that's mom. A good mom. That is a good mom. Yeah. That's an on top of it mother right there. Okay.
Yeah,
so truly, she was helping to, you know, because I think in those situations, to even realize, God, I need to talk about this, might take a minute. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of amazing that she was like, nope, you're out of bed. You're going to this thing because you're going to need it no matter what you think. Yeah.
Yep. I think my appointment was at like 1 o'clock and I drove myself.
Wow.
To this day, I've never had an issue driving.
Okay. So even right after you were just like,
even driving at night. Yeah.
Yeah.
I drove, but I think that's because I made peace with it that night that I didn't do anything wrong.
Right. Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah. I mean, that is true.
Texting anything.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, the one thing is, if there's like a close call on the road and somebody almost hits me, heart rate through the roof.
Yeah.
Jaywalkers scare the crap out of me.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My God. Most of the time, if there is, I have to pull over and just kind of like calm down. I can't.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And then just kind of in my day-to-day life, I'm more jumpy. But I've never had like the nightmares, flashbacks, anything like that. When you like how Hollywood portrays your stereotypical PTSD symptoms, that's not something I've personally ever experienced. So what made this whole thing so much worse is I was in the process of moving down to Savannah.
Okay.
And
how far is Savannah from Atlanta?
4 hours.
Oh, okay.
Four hours from distance, where I lived. Yeah. It's like three and a half from Atlanta. And this accident happened 2 weeks before my move-in date. So, then I'm so stressed out trying to figure out, I don't have a car. How am I still going to go down there right now? I did still do it. I saw my therapist every other day before I moved.
Wow.
I went, it took a week and a half for them to release my car to insurance to total it out. And I was left with 3 days to buy a car before I moved.
Wow.
That was, again, just so stressful. But I remember when the detective did call me to let me know they were releasing my car. That's when I asked him if the officer was okay. But then he also asked me, he said, do you want to know anything about that person? I said, hell no.
Yeah.
I don't, because I know myself. If I know her name, because I do know it was a woman. I remember the outline of a woman, and that's all I know. But if I know her name, I'm going to be looking her up. I'm going to know what family she left behind, if she had any kids, and then I'm never going to move on. I'm just going to be racked with guilt. And so I said, absolutely not. I can't. I just can't be able to process it. It for lack of a better word, I had to kind of dehumanize it.
Yeah.
And not know a name so that I could deal with it.
Yeah. That would certainly be, I would imagine, the hardest part if you did. I mean, it's good that they asked you and they were so considerate of what you might want to or not want to know.
They were very kind to me through the whole thing.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's not always the case, obviously.
Yeah.
So I mean, that was going to be a question. I, by the way, 100% would have said the same thing. I would not. Because like you, it's like the more you know, even the tiniest detail, I could see myself just lingering on that, rolling it over in my mind. And then, you know,
I'm already dwelling on enough. I don't need to dwell on
that. Right.
Too.
Yeah. 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 I mean, yeah. Again, if there was any part of you that, even if it wasn't true, that believed you were somehow culpable or responsible, then that would, and there isn't obviously, and then nor should there be. But like, I have the kind of mind, I worry about things like this, not like I'm always looking out for them, but I hear about things like this. And I just think, I wonder if I would like figure out a way to still be like make up shit that wouldn't be my fault. Even like, did you ever at any point, it sounds like you're therapized early on about it. So I maybe not, but was there any part of you that was like, but what if, that you know what I mean? Like coming up with reasons why we could have, even though it's not true. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think so. Not once.
That's good.
And
that's good.
Yeah. That has made it easier to deal with. What I've dealt with more than that, instead of like the what ifs,
yeah,
it's the anger,
yeah,
of why did this have to happen? Why, yeah, did this have to happen when I was 22? I was a baby.
Yeah.
Why did this have to happen to anybody? Why did she make that choice? Just the anger of knowing that I'm going to be dealing with this for the rest of my life. That's what I feel more than anything, because yeah, I do know I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
My feelings have been validated since that night by multiple people, by my therapist telling me I'm completely valid in how I feel and not wanting to know anything about her, like everything like that. So I don't think I've ever once kind of questioned, what if I did this? What if this happened? Like anything like that. It's just more of the anger I feel towards her.
Yeah, that's got to be tough too, because there's nowhere to put that anger. You know, it's like you can't. It's the person who you might even be able to direct it at. Even if that person was still alive, it's like it wouldn't even make sense to direct it at. But yet there is still that anger. And so what do you do with it? Like, how do you deal with it?
It's not well a lot of the times. You know, when I think moving to Savannah ended up being one of the hardest things I ever did, because I lived down there for about 3.5 years before I moved back home about a year ago to be closer to my family again. And, you know, being in a city where I knew maybe two people, I was 4 hours from my whole support system. I had to find a new therapist. I had to find a trauma therapist. I had to find a new psychiatrist to get properly medicated to deal with my PTSD symptoms. Just that was so much to handle. And it took a long time to figure it all out, trying to figure out healthy coping mechanisms. And because I think one of the biggest things I deal with the form of PTSD that I have is struggling to control my emotions. Sometimes things I would normally react to at like a 5, I'd react to it like a 30. That overstimulation, I get overstimulated a lot easily. I can get like agitated more easily if my anxiety spikes. And that is really difficult. And then just the complete lack of energy. It's like it multiplied any kind of depression symptoms by 100. And just days I couldn't get out of bed. I found it hard to shower. I found it hard to just exist. And that was so hard. It never got to the point where it's like, I wanted to make the choice to die by suicide.
Yeah,
it
right.
was
okay.
just like zero energy, just zapped. I felt numb. I was apathetic to everything. I still deal with that every now and then. I'll hit a low, but thankfully through the amount of therapy I've had and the medication that I'm currently on. Because I was on an antidepressant, but then my PTSD started kind of mimicking symptoms of bipolar too. So we were like, is it bipolar? Because like the back and forth between like my extreme lows. Mm-hmm. But then no, it turns out PTSD can mimic those symptoms.
Yeah.
So we tried out a mood stabilizer that really tackles the lows of bipolar too and added that on to my antidepressant. Mm-hmm. And my God, did that do a world of difference.
Oh, wow. So, that's amazing.
It was great. So that has been like a blessing to finally get a medicine combination, because it took so long to figure one out. That was so much trial and error. It always is, no matter what psychiatric medication you're talking about.
It's true.
Medication in general, it's always some kind of trial and error, which sucks.
Yeah. It does. Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting that, you know, you mentioned PTSD, and people that have zero familiarity with it, understandably, I think of it as this one thing that manifests in this one way that like is something soldiers have or people who have experienced, like, you know,
how Hollywood portrays it. That's what everybody thinks.
Completely.
Of it.
Yeah. And I understand why people think that way, but my limited experience with it and people I know who suffer with it, it is almost never similar to one case to another case to another case, you know? And that, again, it requires this trial and error. And the hardest part, at least in my experience, about any kind of trial and error in terms of medication is it's not just try this, let me know how it is after a couple of days. Oh, that didn't work. Okay, try this, let me know in a couple of days. Some of these things, it's okay, you got to wait 6 weeks to know if it's really taking effect. And then it's like, even after those 6 weeks, you're like, well, maybe it is a little bit better, but, you know, it's like, okay, well, we'll give it another 6 weeks and see if it really is. You know what I mean? It's just like,
let's try bumping your dose. See if that works even better.
It's
just have one thing that works immediately?
I know. Where's the one drug that works for everybody, for every single ailment? Yeah. But that, you know, to talk about anger, you're also dealing with, these are things that make anger grow, having to do this, you know, I could
absolutely
see, you know, if you're dealing with this, like, okay, now I got to deal with another medication. It's not working. I got to deal with, it's like all of these things, even the depression you mentioned, you know, in my own bouts with depression, it's like, there's nothing stopping me. In fact, it happens almost every time it gets severe. I get mad at whatever I perceive is causing the depression, or which is often myself, but it's like anger is right next. It's like the best friend of these things, you know? And so
absolutely,
if the anger is already an issue to begin with, I could see it being sort of triggered by every single step that you had to take along the way, you know?
I've never been one that's super emotional. So to suddenly have my emotions be like times 1,000, that made me even angrier, because it was like, why am I crying all the time? I'm not a crier. Like, I'm not someone that cries if someone talks at them too loudly because they think they're yelling. Like, I'm not that person. And so, like, to suddenly be crying all the time, then I got even more angry. And that it's just a vicious cycle.
It's crazy how much the actions of someone you've never met, have nothing to do with, can not only affect you or anyone at any given time, but can have such a pronounced, profound effect on other people. You know, it's just, it makes me think one of two things. That person who committed suicide that night and used your car as the weapon to do so, either was in such a bad place that they couldn't possibly think about someone and the pain they're causing someone else. It was just the quickest, easiest in their mind way to do it. Or they're just such an enormous piece of shit that they don't even have the ability, the cognitive, you know, to the wherewithal to be like, well, wait, that might actually be terrible. Yeah. You know, it's just, it's wild, you know?
I know. And like, it's gotten to the point where I'm, compared to where I was, it'll be 5 years in January since the anniversary effect. Oh my God, that's terrible.
What happened? Like, do you, yeah, talk about that. What is that like? Yeah.
Yeah. So the first year, the first anniversary of the accident, the whole month of January, I was fucked up. Like the whole month. I was like disassociating every single day. I was just kind of barely existing. I found it hard to really talk to people at work. And then it was horrible. But it, the time I've been down has shortened every single year. This past year, I was down for maybe 3 to 4 days. I was very numb for a couple days before. I didn't get out of bed the day of. And then I had like a recovery day and then I was okay. So like it gets better every year. I will still be dealing with it for the rest of my life. But yeah, the anniversary effect, brutal, brutal, brutal. It's not fun. It's like your subconscious just knows what day it is.
Yeah, right.
And it, you just think it knows it's coming. That's what was so wild that first year. Because like starting January 1st, like I started feeling it. And like the whole month, my subconscious was like, oh, the day's coming. The day's coming. The day's coming. And it,
just this dread, this like mounting dread. Yeah, that's got to be tough. I'm curious, you know, the do you know, I mean, it could be a number of things, which is why I thought to ask you this, but I'm curious if you don't mind talking about this a little bit. Can you pinpoint the reason that you are angry? Like, is it simply because this person, is it because of the randomness? And it was like, how could it be me that this happened to? Or is it more directed at the individual? Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like,
I would say it's probably 50-50.
Yeah.
It's both. I joke all the time that I feel like I'm one of the unluckiest people I've ever met.
Sure, yeah. Well, this would be evidence of that.
This is why.
Yeah.
But also just at that person, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, but again, it's like we said earlier, like, why would this happen?
Right.
Why would this happen to anybody? Why would this ridiculous situation of, like, not only someone jumping in front of my car, but then the drunk driver with the officer, like why would all that happen? Unless it was just a bad script.
Right. Yeah.
So it's just like, it's both of those things just piss me off, honestly.
Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah. I mean, the why thing, just asking why, obviously I think it's very human. I do it all the time. Why me? Why would it happen like this? Why was this or that, whatever. And there's never a good answer. There is no why. I mean, I don't know how you feel about this these things, but I find that at least when I'm in the situation where somebody comes to me and they're asking me why this, why, you know, and I just think the only thing I can think of is like it's best to not concern yourself with why, because the more you ask why, you're just never going to get an answer. And so it's just like the why of it is, it's not that it is meaningless, but for all intents and purposes, there's no help behind asking why, because you're never going to get the answer. And what I would imagine is that only, again, feeds the beast of the anger that you have about the whole entire situation. You know, it's I mean, I can't imagine going through it on your end. I can't, you know.
My therapist told me to just kind of like, she was like, this might be a terrible analogy, but kind of think of yourself as a toddler. And I was like, what are you talking about? She was like, you know how toddlers, they'll ask you questions that you don't have the answer to. And they're like, well, why? But why? But why?
Yeah.
She was like, that's kind of what you're asking yourself. And there's no answer and that's okay. And as soon as she said that, I was like, huh.
Wow, that's interesting. Oh, wow, that is actually a very... clever sort of way of putting it to you. Yeah, like that's very, that really tracks, I think. It's a good way to think of it, because, you know, when we're around kids like that, we're like, stop fucking asking, shut up.
I don't know. You know
what I mean? Yeah. But like from their point of view, they're not doing it to be annoying. They want to know why. And it's not, they're not being annoying. They actually have good reasons, you know, but there's no answer. It doesn't change the fact that there is no answer, you know.
So if you're asking yourself why, you are that toddler.
Exactly.
And there is no answer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. I mean, that's a good place to wrap it up. I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to talk about, but
no, yeah. I think what's really, besides the obvious, like the how it's affected, like just like my relationships with just people in general has been so hard. And thankfully the people close to me have been so supportive, and patient with me.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, someone asked me not too long ago, like, how come like you're never in a relationship? And it's like, I have enough I'm dealing with right now.
Mm-hmm.
I do. Mm-hmm. And their response was, well, but maybe it'll distract you.
Right. That's not something.
And
you
I was
know.
Like,
you know, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, because I've had two things that have been my priority. It's like, number one, a lot of people are still fairly ignorant to mental health and mm-hmm. what it means to have a partner who
yeah.
struggles with their mental health and what yeah. that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So that fear of getting involved with somebody who doesn't understand anything.
Yeah.
And kind of that rejection of like, oh, she's crazy.
Yeah, which is a thing. It's totally a
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, it I is. Mean, people it absolutely
who,
is.
Through no fault of their own, people who don't actually have any experience with either depression or anything like in this, you know, anxiety, anything like that, they really, again, through no fault of their own, they have no idea what it's like. And they actually think things like, well, why can't you just get over it? Are valid questions. And those are valid questions for some things, but for people with clinical depression or anxiety, or in your case, actual PTSD, that's not something to ask. And, you
yeah.
know, as you say, it can be very sort of harmful.
And like, how do I put myself out there? You know, it's like, yeah. on what date do I bring this up? Like,
yeah,
how much do yeah. I get to know somebody before I drop the bomb? Because like,
yeah.
I'm not trying to sit down on date number one and be like, have you ever played Frogger? Like, that's not, that's
yeah.
not what we're going for. And then, so between that, but also like, I've, since the day it happened, I've always been the mentality of, if I am struggling to give myself the love, the care, the grace that I need to deal with this, how in the hell am I going to invest in a partner and give them
yeah.
what they need from me? Because
no,
I,
that's
I
true.
Can hardly give myself that right now.
That part is definitely, definitely true, you know? But in the grand scheme of things, it is still rather recent what
oh,
you
it
experienced.
Is. That's why it's like so not a priority of mine.
Yeah,
so when
right,
people ask
yeah.
me that, I'm just like, no,
yeah, yeah.
not right now.
Yeah.
I'm dealing with enough up here.
yeah. like, the prospect of, I mean, there's one, it's one thing to have people in your life at the moment something like that happens who know you and then know how it affected you so that they can see the bigger picture and understand. Someone new that you meet will only meet the version that they're coming at now. And so I could totally see why in your mind, it's like this at the moment. You know, not forever, but this sort of like issue that's not worth bothering with for now, you know? I mean, the other, I guess, I don't want to say plus side, but the other thing is you really were so young when it happened and you are still so young.
I was a baby.
Yeah. 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 You got time. Not that that's any consolation because, you know,
it still sucks to deal with,
yeah,
but
yeah,
I am.
Yeah,
I'm 27.
Yeah.
I'm young. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It just sucks all around, and it's been very hard, but
I'm sure
we're still here.
And you are clearly able to talk about it, which is always a good thing.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. All right. Well, again, thank you so much for sharing your story, Becca.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I wish you the best of luck. It sounds like you're doing well and that you will continue to do even better in the future. So
thank you.
Yeah.
We're here.
Yeah. Yes, we are. And there's nothing we can do about that.
But we're
yeah.
here.
Yeah. All right, Becca. Take care of yourself.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks.